Welcome everyone to the Caribbean Science Fiction Network, a celebration of all things fantasy, folklore, speculative fiction, and of course, science fiction. Today I have with me from the US Virgin Isles, Cardwell Turnbull.
With no gods, it's about like how do you deal with trauma that's difficult to touch or difficult to name? How do you deal with the impact that it has on you, on your psyche, when it's when you can't triangulate where it's coming from? You know, it kind of acts as it feels very very much above your head.
We'll be talking about his latest novel, No Gods, No Monsters.
These characters are making personal connections to their Caribbean identity, right? So they look at physics, and physics is personal. They look at emergence, and emergence is personal. And so making these high abstract ideas personal was part of the way that I try to, you know, anchor it in something that feels tangible, but also to try to shift the dynamics of power so that it doesn't have to be someone in authority, you know, making these connections. It could be someone that we recognize as being very human, and we can also recognize as being from, you know, the Caribbean context, you know, in my case, the Virgin Islands.
Cardwell, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, yeah, thank you for having me.
Talk to us about how you eventually turned to actually writing this, getting into this genre and writing SF.
Right. So I have a real long answer to that question. There's a lot of different facets to it. I started working on parts of this in the MFA or before the MFA. You know, honestly, I started thinking about aspects of what is now this Convergence saga, you know, which is the series. This is the first book in the series. In undergrad, I would take long walks around the campus and I would think about the gods of, what eventually became the gods of this story. And then in grad school, I worked on what became a section of the book called Other Worlds and This One, which is a backstory for a very important character that's going to take us through the series. And that was, I worked on different parts of that over my few years in the MFA, because I stayed a bit long doing other things. And that stuff made it into the project as well. I would say the main narrative, the monster narrative, came later, but immediately was infused with all of this other stuff that I had been, you know, thinking about and had been cooking for over a decade. And it just became this like big, you know, soup of ideas. And, you know, a big part of it was just trying to scaffold it into something that was coherent and was doing all the things and making all the connections I wanted to make to set up the series, and also to explore the ideas that I wanted to explore in this first book. So yeah, the urban fantasy part came from me reading a lot of urban fantasy at the time, and I loved the genre. I grew up watching, you know, Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Charmed and all of these great urban fantasy shows, and I wanted to do something in the genre, and I hadn't done anything in the genre before, and I was like, what if I did, you know? And then all of this other stuff started, you know, making their way into the project, and I just let it happen.
So let's talk about now. Let's talk about what has led to No Gods, No Monsters. Talk to us about the inspiration for this novel, and even pulling in aspects of the title. So what led you to create this particular novel?
So I don't know how much can I spoil this? I've been talking vaguely about the project. So there's a character in the book that's really important to the project. One of the thoughts that went into that character was, you know, trying to imagine a narrator that had the authority to be omniscient, but was voiced with the Caribbean identity. So like, you know, in in traditional standard third person narrative, the voice is standard, right? The omniscient voice sounds like, I don't know, you know, if it's an American novel, it sounds like the standard American voice, or, you know, if it's a British novel, the standard British voice, or whatever you might imagine that to be. I wanted to write a novel where the third person perspective was a Caribbean perspective, you know, and to write about other places through the lens of someone from the Caribbean, specifically someone that grew up in the Virgin Islands. And that's because, you know, I grew up in the Virgin Islands, but, and I think this is true for a lot of people from the Caribbean, we move around a bit, you know, we go off, we come back, you know, we have, you know, interesting, complex relationships to home. And I wanted to express that in a way that felt like meaningful and like, you know, rich and, you know, grounded in something real. And it felt to me like, cause I, you know, navigate all of these different, you know, places as a person, you know, I went to undergrad in Pittsburgh. I taught abroad in South Korea for a bit. I, you know, went to my MFA in Raleigh, North Carolina. I did a workshop in Seattle and it was very formidable for me. I lived in Boston for several years. Mm-hmm. Because of that, it felt important to me to tell a story that was about being in the world, but being of Caribbean identity in the world. You know what I mean? And so that's the way that I try to, you know, let that, you know, affect the project itself. Because a lot of No Gods, No Monsters isn't set in the Virgin Islands. Some of it is, but I wanted to tell this larger story. But I didn't want to lose the Virgin Islands-ness or my own experience of being a Virgin Islander from that story.
What do you want to share with us about the U.S. Virgin Islands, and particularly through this genre? Give us a sense of the U.S. Virgin Islands and that USVI perspective that you mentioned through the SF genre that you're writing.
Okay, yeah. So my answer to this is also a little bit complicated because I grew up in the Virgin Islands, and I have a very, very personal relationship to it. And, you know, as I've grown, I realized that there's so much about, you know, and this is true of small places and large places, but I think it's, you sort of take it for granted when you're from a small place, you assume you know what's there. And I would go back and discover entire, you know, areas of the island I'd never seen, or I would learn history about a particular thing that I hadn't known. I would get lost, you know, and, you know, St. Thomas is 38 square miles, you know? So like, you know, looking for something and not knowing where it is. And, you know, because I've been away and I've been like, you know, places where you have to drive hours to get from one place to another place, I, you know, take for granted that, you know, I knew the island, I don't. And one of the things that, you know, has been kind of humbling for me is recognizing that and, you know, making that a part of the fiction, making that like, you know, my characters discover, you know, as I'm discovering as well. But St. Thomas for me is like, it's the place, and I talk about this in the novel as well through a character. It's the place where immediately as I get off the airplane, I can feel the spirit of home. I don't know how to explain it. There's just nothing else feels like stepping off an airplane on St. Thomas. It feels like I've entered some, you know, I'm hesitating to use the word sacred, but there's no other place I've ever been that feels so instantly familiar. And, you know, so much of my writing is trying to capture that familiarity. It's very small. It's, it has a deep, you know, history, just like many other Caribbean islands of, colonialism. We've carried many flags, you know, for a long time we were Danish. And then, you know, in, I think it's 1917, if I'm wrong, no one fight me. We transitioned from Danish to American. And that was complicated and fraught, you know, that change of identity. And there's so much markers. There's so many markers of our Danish background, you know, still on the island. And you know, a lot of Caribbean islands are like that, where you see architecture that is, you know, like our architecture is not American, you know, but we definitely now associate ourselves to the US. And so much of that is stuff that I try to explore, try to, you know, reference in projects. I try to give name to that. And then the voice of the, you know, the Virgin Islands, what we sound like, which is really hard to capture on page.
So let's talk about specific elements of this novel, No Gods, No Monsters. Immediately, I was captured by references to the fracture. There's even the fractal sea. So I wanted to get your thoughts on this. Again, we're speaking very vaguely here, but talk to us about how you envision that fracture and even the fractal sea.
Okay, so I'll start with the fracture. For me, it's a reference to how society works generally. Like it's, I have this feeling about it. Of course, I'm not authority on anything, but I know, and I can reference things, you know, especially within American culture, where we see the same thing and we split on it, you know, like, the good reference and the recent reference is the pandemic. We don't all feel the same way about it. And we don't all look at it and see the same thing. But we also do that. There's a reference to officer-involved shooting in the book. And we do that with that, too. And we do that with big, you know, events. We do that with 9/11. We've done it, you know, with everything we look at. American culture will look at a thing and have a whole split on how to interpret that thing. And I think this is also true of other, you know, nations and communities as well. This is, you know, this is just a human condition thing. And that's what I was trying to make real with the fracture in the book. So monsters, you know, reveal themselves and we all don't feel the same way about it. And that was something that I wanted to explore the easy thing to do would be that happens and everyone immediately adjusts to that new reality. Like everyone believes it, but that's not, you know, that doesn't really map to what I see in our reality. We don't really believe anything just by seeing it once or twice or 20 times. We kind of have to, you know, develop our own relationship to a thing and our own doubt about a thing, you know, like, you know, there's people that don't believe the earth is round. You know what I mean? You know, and they don't believe space photos. So it's one of those things that I thought was really important to explore and try to be realistic about how that might happen in the real world. The fractal sea is a mental image of higher reality. It's a way that I'm going to say it so that I don't spoil anything. But, you know, it models itself or it makes, you know, you know, I'm from the Caribbean, so I think about things, you know, I think about the ocean first. And so I was thinking about this higher reality as being an ocean that is kind of like shattered glass.
Let's file the sea under space, right? And let's now turn to time, because in the novel, the passage of time, and even there's reference to what I find is like alternate time. And one of the characters, we can name them Lina or Lena. Her bit is in the present tense. And I was interested in this because I wanted to get your sense on how you view time in the novel, how you were using it as maybe not just a narrative device, but also functional for the themes that you're expressing. So talk to us about time.
To talk about that a bit without, you know, spoiling too much, there's a way that, can I even do it? There's a way that, you know, present tense is not about the now. It's about who is there. I'll put it that way. It's about presence. So present tense is presence. And then past tense is memory, if that makes sense. And It made sense thematically because of all of these themes of alternate choice and time being fractal, and the idea that you could move across time and your experience of time could be different than someone else's experience of time. So relational time is really important in the book as well. So someone's present might be someone else's past, right? And trying to make that, I just did a lot of thinking about trying to to be intentional about where those lines are. And I don't know necessarily, and you know, I guess I don't know if authors admit this stuff, but I don't know necessarily if I got that perfectly, but I trusted my senses a lot with how I was rendering that out.
I mentioned Lina, but let's talk about some of the other characters, because I was also fascinated by Dragon. And I find like all of these different characters, they bring something unique to your story. So I want you to talk about how you're using these different characters, and particularly Dragon, as an overall sort of contribution to then to the title of No Gods, No Monsters, and ultimately what you set out to do.
Yeah, there's some things about Dragon that I know that will be revealed later, but he's important. Yeah. And, but what's interesting about Dragon, and it mirrors another entity within the series, he's very, very young, and so he doesn't really understand what important means. And he's navigating a world where everyone knows more than he does, and he's been sort of sheltered isn't the right word, because sheltered would imply some care involved in the sheltering. He's been locked away. And yeah. He's young and locked away, so he's coming into this world as being very naive. But he's, and so in that way, he's kind of like a mirror of us entering the world, not knowing how the world actually works. But he has very good intuition, and he's learning things and picking up on things pretty quickly. And he's learning things that other people are failing to learn because they have so much noise. You know, like Dragon comes in, and because he doesn't have a lot of noise, he doesn't know a lot, he notices things that is difficult, you know, for most people who assume their rightness and their knowledge to notice. And in that sense, Dragon is one of the, I would say he's a significant figure, because he's an access point to things that many of the other POVs can't access.
So leaving the characters for a while, let's jump back to themes, particularly what happens with references to trauma. And I'm not sure if you were playful in this sense, because at one point there was a line, trauma is an open door. Then the next page, Lina is standing in front of a closed door. So no, I wanted to talk about trauma and how you're using it in the novel, because you've mentioned aspects of Caribbean identity, particularly history. But what specifically about trauma you wanted to communicate in this novel?
So I see No Gods, No Monsters very much as a sister novel to The Lesson, my first book. And that book, you know, they're exploring what you do, how the world responds when there's a threat from without. That's The Lesson. And in that book, it's First Contact, so it's aliens. And in this book, it's how do you respond to a threat from within, which is, you know, monsters from, you know, popular and, you know, folklore. Popular folklore and mythology and that sort of thing. And, you know, in that sense, you know, there's some thematic things going on in terms of how society deals with trauma and different kinds of trauma. And, you know, in The Lesson, it's about how community deals with trauma, especially trauma that looks very similar to other traumas, and how these things can kind of form, you know, destructive cycles. With No Gods, it's about like how do you deal with trauma that's difficult to touch or difficult to name? How do you deal with the impact that it has on you, on your psyche, when it's when you can't triangulate where it's coming from? You know, it kind of acts as it feels very very much above your head, right? And so in my mind, you know, trauma being an open door, it's you know, when you're traumatized, and sometimes when you're traumatized and you don't even realize where it's coming from or what it means or who's responsible, you lash out. You know, your trauma becomes a weapon. You know, you weaponize it against other people. And in my mind, that's what I was expressing when I used the phrase trauma is an open door, right? It's trauma doesn't stay in one place. And because you have relationships with other people, your trauma can leap from you without you realizing it, or without you having full control over it. And that was something that, you know, a lot of the characters in the story are dealing with and experiencing, but that's something that the world is also experiencing as this monster situation, you know, grows and develops. You know, this kind of sense that something is wrong, but not being able to name or touch it or being able to find the bottom of it is a lot of what's affecting characters and community and society as a whole in the novel.
Now, at other points, the novel gets really deep with examinations of evolution. There's references to physics, the bees, there's cosmology. So it gets really deep. And I'm really just curious to know what kinds of reading you did around these huge topics. And did you discover anything interesting along the way, or anything that you found sort of meshing well with examinations of Caribbean identity?
That's fairly okay. I'm trying to think about how to approach it. So a lot of the things that I incorporated into the novel, I kind of did it in the same way that I did with like some of the things I've been thinking about for many years. It came into the novel just based on instinct. You know, like there was something telling me this is connected to this, and so I would make connections in that way. And one of the things that I was thinking a lot about was emergence. You know, it happens in the natural world where complex interactions between large groups of anything, you know, in this example, it was bees, but, you know, with ants or with birds, that you can see or glimpse a pattern, right? And it's not that the pattern is being determined by any individual bird. You know, if we're talking about like murmurations in the air, the pattern, you know, emerges from from interactions across birds, you know? And so, you know, I made that thematic connection between the way society responds to conflict, to threat, to change as being like a emergent thing. You know, no one person knows where anything is going to go, you know? So like, if we're looking at the civil rights movement, the civil rights movement came out of the zeitgeist, right? It was a time, you know, and a lot of different types of people, a lot of different ways of thinking about it, and a lot of different conflicts came together at that moment. And what came out of that moment was the result of all of those things happening at once. It wasn't any one thing happening. And we're going through a similar moment right now, an emergent moment with the pandemic. And so I wanted to make that, you know, connection between the natural world and the human world, and to make it clear that as humans, we're not operating at such a high frequency that we're not subject to, you know, laws that we don't understand within the natural world. And, you know, I mean, the thing that makes it Caribbean, I guess, is that I decide not to just center, a dominant perspective when looking at these things. I have characters that are from the Caribbean, or I have someone that's telling the story that's from the Caribbean, and you know, these characters are making personal connections to their Caribbean identity, right? So they look at physics, and physics is personal. They look at emergence, and emergence is personal. And so making these high abstract ideas personal was part of the way that I try to, you know, anchor it in something that feels tangible, but also to try to shift the dynamics of power so that it doesn't have to be someone in authority, you know, making these connections. It could be someone that we recognize as being very human, and we can also recognize as being from, you know, the Caribbean context, you know, in my case, the Virgin Islands.
I really like how you're sort of meshing, bringing together the science and the science fiction. I really, really like that. We're coming down to the end of the chat, but I want to talk about one more moment that happens in the novel before I let you go. Because I found it was sort of this meta moment where we're reading, in your novel, there's one of the characters, Rebecca. She's discovering science fiction literature. So we're reading your novel about science fiction, and we're reading her reading about science fiction. You know, let's just round it out for us. Like, where do you see this genre sort of take in the Caribbean? Where can it go? I mean, this is your perspective, and we want to know what your perspective is. So, what about science fiction and the Caribbean can go so well? And where should it take us? Where can it take us?
Yeah, I mean, like, I think it's just really fun to have, you know, science fiction. You know, mm-hmm. a science fiction story where the characters are referencing science fiction, you know, like that there's like a kind of genre awareness, like, and this is how the, you know, the world is, where, you know, we are in a pandemic, but there's a ton of pandemic fiction, and we engage with it as we're engaging with the real pandemic. And so I thought it would be fun for Rebecca to be reading about a monster story while also being a monster and experiencing the monster world, you know? And I did it in a lesson too. There's like alien fiction and they're interacting with alien fiction as they're, you know, aliens are in the story. And I think it's just kind of fun to be genre aware in that way and play with it. You know, your larger question, you know, where do I see science fiction taking us? I see science fiction in a general sense as an engine towards imagining different or better futures, right? And finding stories to take us, you know, take us through the steps of how we get there. Mm-hmm. And I write, you know, occasionally when I write short fiction, I write, imagined alternate, you know, Caribbean futures. And I think that, you know, in that sense, science fiction has a lot to offer the Caribbean in terms of, you know, allowing the Caribbean to imagine itself in different ways, in new ways, in independent ways. And I have my own thoughts, or I play in that and try to explore that in my own way. But, you know, there's a bunch of other Caribbean authors that do similar things, you know, like I'm, you know, a good friend with Tobias Bukel, who also, you know, grew up in the Virgin Islands. And he writes, you know, Caribbean futures that are wildly imaginative. You know, I think about Nalo Hopkinson, who writes Caribbean futures set on different planets that are where the planets are Caribbean, you know, like the culture travels to that other world. You know, and I think about, you know, Karen Lord, who has, you know, fantastic fiction imagining alternative futures, or just thinking about science fiction through the Caribbean context. And that stuff is just really exciting to be able to, you know, prioritize a particular point of view when thinking about genre.
Yeah. So, Cardwell, we're at the end. We're at the end of the chat. But first of all, any more monsters to look forward to? And anything else you want to leave us with?
Yeah, I'm working on the second book, you know, and, you know, it's, I'm both, you know, discovering a lot and having a lot of fun, and it's also really challenging. So there's more monsters coming. I'm very excited to get to the end of it. I want to have the ending that I have in my mind on the page.
We're looking forward. Cardwell, I want to thank you so much for doing this. It was a real pleasure chatting about this book, and we're always looking forward to the next bit that you produce.
Thank you so much.
So to everyone listening, I want to thank you as well. Continue to stay tuned to the Caribbean Science Fiction Network. Bye.